I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. Hey guys, I just got back from South by Southwest in Austin, and came away with some pretty incredible interviews, like today's, John C. Reilly and Jonah Hill. Pretty cool, huh? They were promoting their new film, Cyrus. The film is kind of a departure for both of them, but it's still incredibly funny. Definitely check it out when you can. The interview was in roundtable format, so you'll hear several people asking questions, not just me. We talked about how they approach their roles, improv, and much, much more.
So, do you think the era of the John C. Reilly leading man romantic comedy is finally here?
Yes. Thank God. I don't know. Is there an era like that?
Isn't it always?
I hope so. I'm a very romantic person. I like doing parts like this. And I think there's lots of people out there that are not represented in movies that have romantic feelings whose stories don't get told.
Exactly. We're not all men.
You know what I'm talking about. We're not all men. No, neither of us look like Brad Pitt. Yeah. Let's not fool ourselves. I'm with you, brother.
I'm happy to see you do this genre and bring a reality to it that's missing from some of the other things. An emotional reality.
Yeah, we try to be truthful in our emotions in this movie.
Did you see yourself kind of as a straight man in this? I mean, if you're going to call it a romantic comedy.
No, you know, the straight man is Marissa's character because she doesn't know what's going on. You know, we got this whole secret battle happening. We're pretending in front of her like it's not going on. But, yeah. Because I'm a very foolish character in this movie, too. I make a lot of mistakes and bad choices and yeah.
But with a little more maturity, I think.
Yeah.
I like the maturity of your character.
Yeah, that's one thing I really did enjoy playing this movie. It's like, I'm not a kid anymore. I often play or have played man-child kind of characters before, and it was really great to be able to just sit in a scene and be as mature as I am in life, you know? And I think that's some of the best moments of awkwardness between Jonah and I when he's like, seriously, dude, don't fuck my mom. And then my comeback, you improvised that line, my comeback was, well, I'm not going to lie to you, your mom and I did have sex. You know, it's just one of those
moments
where you're being truthful, like, all right, if this is the situation, regardless of what the script says, like, this is how I would deal with it. So I was sitting across from a 21-year-old, like, I could be like, Mommy and I are
special friends.
Yeah. When a man and a woman really like each other.
Your characters had some similarities and some differences in, like, you both had, like, a codependence thing and stuff. Did that come into play when you were preparing as far as, like, what your characters, how they related to each other?
We didn't really talk openly. We didn't really rehearse, and we didn't really do too much analytical talking about.
We didn't intertwine. I think Mark and Jay purposefully kept it, and we purposefully kept it separate because it felt more interesting to not know what John was thinking about going into the scene, him not knowing what I was thinking about going into the scene or the movie in general, because it was better to be surprised and better to just have your own thing going on. And these three people don't know what's going on really with each other. You know, or especially, no one knows what's going on with Cyrus specifically, you know, because he's putting on a front to each person that's different than what he's actually doing or going through emotionally.
And Mark and Jay would sometimes give, we'd discuss things with everyone there, and other times they would say, well, we want to talk to Jonah alone now, and then we'd come, and I'm going to talk to you, and sometimes give us conflicting information so that, you know, it would create dynamics.
Can you give an example of that?
Specifically? Well, no.
I can't give a specific example, but something we would always tell you to say about
like that scene when I wake up in the morning, you know, like, so what are you guys doing today? You know, like, I'm obviously trying to, like, become part of their day. They're just like, anyway, like, kind of ignoring me. I could tell, like, you know, Mark and Jay must have said, just shut him down.
Yeah, like, don't even explain to him, like, hey, this is something we do by ourselves,
right,
or whatever. Just kind of you just, there's no way, it's even a possibility that he would come along for something like that. It wouldn't even occur to us to say, hey, I'm sure this is strange because you subbed over, but we actually just do this on our own. This is our kind of special thing. But it doesn't occur to Molly or Cyrus to even have to explain that because they only are around each other. They don't even get that it's awkward for John, you know?
What about the shoe thing? I really found that to be intriguing. And a man would actually leave a house without his shoes, knowing that he'd gone to the house.
What can I do, though? That's why it's such an effective psychological warfare tactic. Like, what about something to do? They're both like, we have to leave now. Like, I'm sorry you can't find your shoes, but there's the door.
I remember, like, the first time I read the script, I immediately, that was the action. Without knowing that I had hit the shoes yet, because it's not at that point, I just went, oh shit. Like, I knew immediately where the character was going. And that was the moment I think I figured out how to play the character, even not knowing really till later that he had hid the shoes. I just put it together when I was reading the script. And it was that point in the script where I didn't know how to play the character while reading it until I got to that part in the script. I go, oh man, he's got a lot. He's planned a lot of this out. He's a very manipulative person who's not going to show his cards to anyone, including his mom, who's his best and possibly only friend.
When you have a character that's dark and actually trying to destroy something, you've done edgy comedies before, but as opposed to having a protagonist who's trying to achieve something, does that open up new doors for comedy for you?
I mean, I didn't really approach this film like a comedy. I definitely approached it more, I don't want to say as a drama, but just as strictly real life all the time, never once thinking I got to riff a joke in this pocket. This scene's not funny enough. Like, a lot of times in our other, the movies you wouldn't maybe know me from, if you do at all, then that, a lot of times you have to think, gosh, we need a button for the scene, or we need three more jokes because the scene's playing very flat. And in this film, it was just about riffing on emotions and how emotions come out, more than one emotion come out in a conversation. Like, in real life, a conversation can be funny and dark and sad and, and humiliating and uncomfortable, all in the same conversation. You know, there are tough conversations in life, and never once was I like, oh, this would be a great script to mine for comedy. I just looked at it as, this is a great script to just tell a real story that never once feels like you're going for something that wouldn't happen in real life. And I thought that was what was stood out as beautiful to me while reading it.
Is that something you might then bring to your future movies?
Well, the thing is, you know, a movie like Superbad, I think, was very real. My character and Michael's character were very real, I think, or else you wouldn't have liked that movie, probably, you know. And, you know, Sarah Marshall or Get Him to the Greek are these movies that I love doing. I do approach them as being as real as possible, and you have to be a real human being to watch a movie like that from start to finish. But the thing is that it's a bigger, broader comedy, and you have to make the audience really laugh a lot in every scene, or they're not getting their money's worth. So it's even trickier to do something like that than to do something like this, because you're having to be real and a real person that they buy as a human being and care about their journey, as well as lacing in five jokes per scene that work, you know? Does that make sense at all?
What about the keyboard scene? Do you play for real? And how did that all...
I do play. The new age type musician, world musician guy was something Mark and Jay had the idea from spot on from the beginning. And I was down with it 100%, except my big thing was, I don't want the music to feel jokey. And I never want it to feel like you hear his music for the first time and it's some big cartoonish joke. The joke is how uncomfortable it is to play your music for a stranger and look at him in the eyes the whole time. And it's a weird intimidation tactic. And Michael Andrews, who did the music beautiful music for the film, I thought, especially in the scenes where John and Marissa are dating. Those pieces mm-hmm. to me were so beautiful. He and Jay and Mark just figured out tone for Cyrus's music, and I gave input, but really Mike Andrews is the genius, and Jay and Mark, being the great filmmakers that they are, would never step outside of their own tone, so I trusted them, obviously, to not make it jokey. But my only thing was, like, don't make his music jokey. Make it good world music or good new age music, and I think that's why that scene's effective. Because he's not, like, a bad musician or anything. It's actually, for that, I'm not a fan of that genre of music, but it's very good. He's talented, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know.
I thought that was an interesting thing. He would be good at whatever he was doing, you know?
You guys did a lot of... I know that the Duplass brothers do a lot of improvising in their movies. Did you? How far away did you stray from the script? And
dialogue-wise, we never really did the script. I mean, there was a few places where we did what was written, but for the most part, I mean, I thought that was a really kind of egoless way to direct a movie, especially since they wrote it.
And it was a really good script.
Really?
Yeah. It was a great script. It was actually one of the better scripts I've ever read.
Yeah, you know what needs to happen here? Like, we don't have to say this. Just say it as honestly as you can to each other, which was a lot of fun, very empowering, but also like a big responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, did you ever worry that you were just going to, like... Were there a lot of scenes where it just didn't work because you didn't end up in the right place, or...?
Only one scene that did. Actually...
A couple places where scenes where they... What they... You know, what we found on the day didn't exactly jibe with what the structure of the movie needed to be in the editing room. So in those places, I think they did those more kind of creative voiceover things. You hear dialogue while people are not saying dialogue, and mm-hmm. where they kind of layered, which I thought was really... That's not what they intentionally set out to do, you know? Uh-huh. It's not like we filmed those scenes so that they could do that. It's just that we improvised our way through a scene, and then they turned it into that. It's one of those kind of cool moments where necessity is the mother of invention, you know? They created this new kind of interesting way to move the story along because they needed to, because the scene as we shot it was different than that. So,
kind of going along with that, you both have a lot of improv experience and based in that, but usually, like you said, it's driving more at finding a punchline, and a lot of it is like very clearly Marcus humor, whereas in Cyrus, it just had this very natural flowing tendency that the jokes kind of came out. Was that more freeing for you to work in this more naturalistic way? Was it harder?
Well, I came up doing improv in acting school mm-hmm. and in Chicago, and at the time that I was coming up, there were people doing Second City and Improv Olympic and Upright Citizens Begin. All those guys were kind of, you know, Adam McKay was in Chicago at Second City doing that kind of improv. Will mm-hmm. Ferrell was in L.A. doing The Groundlings, that kind of sketch-based improv stuff. And I was using similar techniques, but in acting school, based on this book this woman wrote named Viola Spolin, which was like improvisation as a way to just become a better actor, but also to just not as a slave to the joke, not to chasing the punchline. Just the whole object of it is just to make things real, you know? So I always thought, like, I took to it right away when I was in acting school. And then when I got out and started to do movies, I would always improvise a little bit here and there, even in dramatic movies. Then I started to work with Adam McKay and Judd Apatow and those guys, and I was like, oh, wow, like, you really get to improvise here. But I always wanted to just, like, wow, it'd be cool to be able to improvise and just not have to worry whether the scene was going to be funny at the mm-hmm. end of the day. Like, if it was just, let's just try to be as honest. And, like, and then this movie came up, you know, it was like the perfect kind of holy grail moment, like, oh, this is when we get to do that.
There you have it. Thanks, John and Jonah. And thank you for listening. Keep coming back to DailyActor.com. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.